Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Simon Back from Backsberg Estates. How are you, Simon?
I'm all right, yourself?
Yeah, I'm very good indeed. Looking forward to the rugby, as I think I've mentioned earlier to you. Anyway, let's crack on.
Looking forward to being beaten. What are you trying to say?
No, well, see, that's the thing, isn't it? So I remember the last time the All Blacks played South Africa in the final, and in South Africa, there was a lot of food poisoning going on. So now that they're in New Zealand, I'm sure you South African guys, if there is a final, you won't be eating for a couple of days.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it was accidental.
Sure, definitely.
Anyway, let's crack on. We're going to talk a wee bit about PET bottles, environment, a bit about black empowerment. Is that the right word, black empowerment?
Yeah, I think you can use that, yeah. Black economic empowerment.
Yeah, and I want to talk also a wee bit about some of the compromises between environment and social responsibility, because they can be at conflict at times, and there's some interesting conflicts that do come out. So we'll crack into that. But I'm quite interested in talking to you guys about PET bottles, because you've released PET bottled wine in South Africa, and one of the few wineries I know that have done it. Is that part of your, because you're zero carbon, aren't you, Fisk?
Yeah, we're carbon neutral, the first carbon neutral winery in South Africa.
Yeah. Who accredited you, by the way?
So it's done by a third party within South Africa called Prometheum, and they come and do an annual audit for us.
Okay. All right, and are you carbon neutral through buying credits, or are you carbon neutral through mitigation?
So we do a lot of offsetting in the area, and specifically through planting trees, yeah.
Okay, so you're doing your own plant. Oh, I hate planting trees as a carbon way.
It's one of the things we're doing. I mean, the other thing is to really look at what we're doing within the winery and our business itself, and actually reducing, you know, the fuel usage and the electricity usage.
Okay, what about fertilizers? Do you use a lot of fertilizers?
We do use fertilizer, but we're also trying to work on actually reducing that as well.
Yeah, because that's quite a big carbon footprint fertilizer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there more environmentally friendly fertilizers?
Totally. I mean, you know, we're working a lot at the moment on, you know, building kind of soil health, and we've got a massive composting program where there's literally these huge amounts of compost on the farm, and we're trying to, you know, just basically reduce the need for fertilizer or anything like that.
Okay. Let's crack on to PET. Yeah. You guys launched a PET bottle in South Africa. It's only available in South Africa.
Correct.
For the South African market. What was the driver behind that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, along with, you know, going carbon neutral, I mean, we want to look at various packaging options from a going green perspective. And one of the options that we have been looking at for a while is the PET bottle. And we saw examples in Europe, we saw examples in Australia. And I think it's a very interesting, you know, option. For us, we partnered, you know, with a retailer in South Africa called Pick and Pay, and we launched it effectively with them. I think having a retail partner, in a sense, for a relatively new packaging option seemed to be the way to go. And, you know, there's huge benefits with the PET, mostly that come off the back of the fact that the bottle is so light. The bottle weighs about 50 grams. So, you know, if you compare that to a normal glass bottle, you're looking at probably 450 to, you know, up to 650. And sometimes, you know, the really heavy weights, you know, anything above, you know, sometimes a kilogram or something like that. So, you know, there's huge savings all the way through the chain, you know, whether it's the bottles actually to the winery, and then, you know, actually being shipped out, you know, through the distribution and onto the shelf. There's a lot of savings that you can have.
Okay, was it just environmental savings? I presume there'd be a cost saving with the PET bottle.
Yeah, there's a cost saving as well. I mean, you know, in terms of distribution, you can, if you look at a container of wine, you can fit about approximately a third more product into the same space. So there's definitely cost savings as well.
What about the glass itself versus plastic? Is plastic more? Is cheaper than glass, or
at the moment the volumes in South Africa, at least, it's kind of comparable. But I think, you know, with more people going into PET, that those costs should come down as well.
Okay, so are you saying there's not a lot of infrastructure for PET bottles?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very new thing for South Africa, at least. So, you know, as soon as the guys who are producing the bottle, you know, can get the volumes up, I think, you know, the costs will come down.
Is there any special coatings or films? I've spoken to Kiwi company who were looking to bring in PET bottles into the UK, and they were talking up their films, and they wouldn't tell me what the films were or anything like that. But what is PET first, technically?
Yeah, it's polyethylene terephthalate. That's the that's the full one. I mean, it's plastic. So the bottle that we're using is a multi-layer PET bottle. So basically, you've got two layers of PET that encompasses an oxygen scavenger layer, which basically helps prevent any oxidation that can occur.
So what's in the scavenger layer?
So it basically chews up any oxygen that may be, you know, dissolved in the wine itself. So, I mean, one of the limitations currently with PET is the shelf life. So, you know, we're not going to put anything in PET that, you know, needs to be cellared. So, for instance, all our Backsberg wines are still, you know, bottled in glass. And we've actually introduced a new brand, which is called Tread Lightly, where we're bottling, you know, wines for pick and pay. And so the idea there is that, you know, the wines are meant to be drunk, you know, fairly shortly after going onto the shelf.
What sort of shelf life do you think they have?
Yeah, I mean, the tests that we've looked at all point to around 2 years. You know, I think the technology has come a long way. I mean, when we first looked at it, you know, it was sort of 6 months to maybe a year. But things seem to have improved, and everything that we look at points to about 2 years.
Okay, and is that consistent for all styles? Because I would have thought, you know, wines with particularly high acidity and lots of tannins, which are good at mopping up oxygen, both of those, or managing oxidation.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment it looks that way. I mean, we've bottled the first of our wines in, you know, in June of last year. So I think, you know, maybe time will tell. I mean, at this point we've actually put sort of a sell-by date, if you will, of a year for the first bottling. So, you know, we've already moved on to the second bottling. So I think it's that wine has already gone through the pipeline, as it were.
And how many trials did you run first? Did you have quite a few years of stock that you've been
We've been working. So the technology is actually not specific to South Africa. So the supplier, which is called Mondi, they've been doing tests with European technology suppliers. So that's been going, those tests have been going on for literally years. So it's not something that we just happened upon, as it were. I mean, it's something that, you know, we have to obviously take very seriously. You know, we're underpinning the brand itself. So, you know, anything that we say needs to have credibility. So we've worked hard with the supplier and making sure that, you know, it's legitimate, so to speak.
Yeah, a year is, you think is quite comfortable?
I think so, yeah. I think we're good for a year.
Do you think you'd roll it out any further? Because one of the advantages of having a company like, what is it called, Pick and Pack?
Pick and Pay.
Pick and Pay, yeah. And I presume they're a big supermarket chain.
Yeah, it's a fairly large retailer in South Africa.
That they can rattle through volume. One of the key things about rattling through volume is that you bottle, you ship it to the supermarket, it gets sold, and if it's like the UK, it'll be consumed within hours anyway. Yeah. So you're not really worrying about any stock hanging around.
Exactly.
But once you start pushing it out to further distribution channels, you'll find that you may start getting into problems with the stock.
Then, you know, then it's going to be a real question of ratcheting up the management of that, you know, that aspect, definitely.
Yep. Are you planning on running it out to other channels, or is it, you know, you're quite happy with Pick and Pay?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, we're actually going to review that in the coming months, whether we're going to stick with Pick and Pay on our exclusivity agreement, or whether we're going to open it up to the other retailers. So that's in the pipeline, so to speak, on discussing that. As far as exports are concerned, we've waited intentionally just to make sure that, you know, there's no funnies in the South African market. And to date, we're happy with what's gone on there. So I think the next step is to look at opportunities on the exports, for sure.
I saw an interesting article about plastic bottles in airplanes.
Yeah.
That one of the airlines in America were using 1 liter plastic bottles.
Okay.
And I presume that's a natural place to put a plastic bottle because of the weight restrictions and all that sort of stuff.
Totally.
But if you do export, would you be looking to ship them to Europe or?
Well, I mean, Scandinavia is one of the key places that they're actually pushing PET bottles. If you look at Systembolaget, at the monopoly in Sweden, I was reading their kind of yearly annual report, and they're specifically saying they want to move more and more into PET. And they're actually giving producers the opportunity to change from glass to PET with, you know, a particular line. So, you know, I think they're backing it, and there was actually a great report that they put out, or they had commissioned with Vinopolit, which is the Norwegian monopoly, where they actually, you know, compared, you know, PET to glass to bag-in-the-box and what have you. So I think they're backing it for sure. So there are opportunities definitely in Europe.
I suppose one of the issues you get is if you are shipping, how long does it take to get from South Africa to Norway?
It depends, but a good couple of weeks for sure.
Oh, it's only a couple of weeks. Yeah. I would have thought, yeah, I've shipped stuff from New Zealand to the UK in the past. And it's taken a long time. They're sat in docks, and then they've... You've got paperwork to clear.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. You've got to manage the logistics both sides. But, I mean, I think you're looking like a month, month and a half.
Maybe. Okay, and if you think you've got a year, I always think PET probably being safe for 6 months. So as long as it's getting good throughput, it's probably reasonably safe.
Yeah, I think I would like to think it's more than 6 months. You know, I think that definitely was the case, you know, a couple of years ago. But I think you could probably be safe with at least a year.
And that's mainly that oxygen scavenging layer?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, after, you know, a certain period of time, you know, the efficacy of that layer gets undermined, and so you can run into problems.
Just changing tact slightly, sure. There's black empowerment. It's a big thing in South Africa, particularly after apartheid. You know, there's a lot of white folks who felt bad. I know that's the right way of saying it, but, you know, to try and get some equality within the society. Sure. And I noticed things like you've done some things like providing land so that there's some government housing schemes and things like that.
Correct,
so you're trying to go down that route. What was the reasoning behind that anyway? Yeah. Is that the only thing you guys have done?
Yeah, I mean, a major project we did in the late 90s was called Freedom Road. And as you kind of allude to, you know, South Africa's got obviously a history of, you know, the apartheid, first of all, and, you know, the inequality that came with that. And one of the things that, you know, was synonymous within agriculture was that there was this kind of bond between employer and employee, you know. So if one of your farm workers, you know, if they wanted to leave and go do something else, it was very difficult because, you know, the farmer was normally providing housing or some sort of housing. I'm not commenting on the level, but, you know, so it was very actually hard for them to say, well, the farm workers to say, I actually want to go do something better, you know, because they didn't have the funds or the you know, to do that.
Security.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they couldn't just leave because where were they going to go? Where were they going to stay? You know, so I think for my father, it was very important to try and break that kind of relationship, almost feudalistic relationship, if you like. And so in the late 90s, what we did was that we rented a piece of land on behalf of our farm workers. And basically after work at Baxburg, they would go and spend their after hours working at this property. And then we developed a label called Freedom Road. And we did a deal here in the UK as well as in Sweden. And we sold the product. And basically the money from that, together with first-time homeowners in South Africa with a previously disadvantaged background, can get a grant and some finance from my father. And we basically built all our farm workers their own houses on their own property, not too far away from Baxburg. And I think what was great was that, you know, a couple of the guys said, okay, cool, now we've got a house, now we're going to do something else. And, you know, a number of them, you know, left Baxburg, or they resigned, or whatever. And I think that was fantastic for us because now they were saying, okay, cool, now I've got my security. I can now maybe go do something else or do something different.
I was thinking if you built it near your vineyard, it would sort of almost create a bit of stickiness with the employees, but...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, many of them stayed on as well. And I think, you know, what's fantastic, you know, you drive past the houses and some of the workers have painted them all sorts of interesting colors. So you've got a pink one and a brown one. And for me, that's just such a great statement of saying, you know, we own this and we can do what we want. And, you know, now these guys have an asset that's, you know, worth, you know, in rand terms, maybe 300,000 rand. So, I don't know, 30,000 pounds, and, you know, for a farm worker who perhaps couldn't even read or write, that's a serious asset. And you know, I think that's been a fantastic project.
One of the problems with your environmental credentials and your social responsibility is that they're not necessarily in sync. There's a lot of talk in Australia anyway when Constellation moved the bottling from Australia to the UK, and it was done mainly for cost.
Yeah.
It was cheaper to bottle over here, ship the wine in bulk and then bottle. But also if from an environmental point of view, it's better to ship and bottle in the UK. But if you went down that route, you would possibly lose quite a lot of workers and jobs for your workers. How do you balance those two?
How do you reconcile those two issues?
On the one hand, you class yourself as quite environmentally, and then at the same time, you're trying to be quite social.
True.
But they can be loggerheads.
Yeah, I mean, totally agree. I mean, there was a big move at one stage to do exactly that for some of the bulk producers in South Africa, is to basically ship bulk wine over here to the UK and do the bottling here. But effectively, you were going to be exporting the jobs, as you were saying. So, you know, it's definitely a tough issue. And, you know, I mean, we're saying, okay, if you take the carbon neutral argument, you know, we're saying you should say to people that now they must drive a smaller car or they must use less electricity. And sometimes you're saying these things to people that have never owned a car or have never had electricity. So it's in conflict with sort of aspirational wants and needs. So it's very difficult to sometimes balance those and prioritize. What do you say oftentimes? And so I think you need to be conscious of the social context and go with that when you're doing anything environmental. And you have to understand that sometimes it's not, you know, the first prize as far as the environmental line is concerned is not always, you know, the best outcome from a social perspective. So it's a challenge.
And have you considered bulk shipping your wines?
You know, we haven't. At this point, I think for us, it's a quality question. And, you know, bottling everything on site and managing that for us is important for ensuring the quality.
A lot of winemakers talk about that quality. I don't know. How you do a couple of lab tests, you make sure your sulfur levels are right. You know, how much of a quality control is there in a bottling plant that's designed to run and is set up for bottling wine?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that'll always be a debatable point. But I know that we like having control of the whole process and doing everything on site. So I'm sure that there are options, but at this stage we feel we like to bottle on site.
I suppose it's also a volume, isn't it? You've got to be
I was going to say, I don't think we're really in that space. You know, I think there you're talking hundreds of thousand cases, and we're simply not in that league as far as volume is concerned.
All right, so I suppose for you it's not really a hard question because it's not economical.
To set up that whole infrastructure, we don't sell in supermarkets in the UK. So I think we're already out of that kind of question, so to speak.
Okay. All right. No, I think that's pretty good there, Simon. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thanks a lot.